You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, it's Stage Direction with Alice Canton.
Morena Alice returns.
I returned! Woo! Yay, I was just like mourning how I hadn't been in a long time.
You've been in Edinburgh, you've been living it up in the warmer climes.
In the wetter climes. And honestly, they were like, oh, you just returned from a summer. And I was like, comparable to like a mild spring in Wellington.
Yes.
That's the weather. But
so what's been the vibe at the Fringe? What were your faves, your not faves, takeaways from the whole thing?
I was just saying to Stella this morning, I think it's that thing of, I was actually reading an article in The Guardian, and there was this sort of like, there's this unhealthy obsession with like infinite growth with the festival. Every year it gets bigger and better. And the question is, now that they've got the data, this year is something like 19% down from 2019,
really?
But still 11% up on last year. So it's like getting back to 2019.
Some normalcy.
Yeah, and then the question is, well, why do we want to get back to that? What is that? 3,500 shows this year? Why do we want to push for 4,000?
So it's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of critical chat around that. And I think with good reason. I think I might have said last time I chatted to you guys, it's kind of a drift net, right? So you get a lot in your net. You get the boot and the Coca-Cola can. I'm thinking like The Simpsons right now.
Yes.
You get the fish with the three eyes. And then you'll get some incredible, inspiring, deeply
totally.
Super developed works that have had a lot of money invested in it. And in those instances, it's like shows that are basically at the arts festival level choosing the Fringe as their platform. So
interesting.
Yeah, a complex time. Look, I am just going to signal this. If anyone wants to know anything about Edinburgh Fringe or is considering taking a work there, I'm more than happy. My DMs are open for sliding. So please just jump on in.
It's rare for someone to say, please slide into the DMs. But Alice is, you know, genuinely one of the most knowledgeable and useful people to speak to about this stuff. So hit her up.
I mean, look, I might not be knowledgeable, but I'll give you my reckons. And that's enough, right?
You have good reckons. let's reckon about some local theatre. We're not alone in the studio this morning. Morning, Alice. Would you like to introduce our guests?
I'm so stoked to introduce Aman and Bala from Boom Shankar, which is coming to Q Theatre, opening tomorrow night as a part of the Matchbox Theatre presentation, which is Q Theatre's co-presentation with three dynamic, exciting, interesting works in their program. Welcome.
Thank you.
You guys are like, we're about to open our show tomorrow. Now, this work, you've done a season at Comedy Festival. You came back to the Basement Theatre for a two-week season, and now you're at Q Theatre. Tell me, maybe you could speak to this, what has the development of this work been? Because it's trice, and I love this. I love that you have been working this this piece on the floor with a paying audience, and you learn so quick through that. So, yeah, talk to us about that development.
Yeah, sure. So Boom Shankar started as a 5-minute monologue as part of Prayas, which is a South Asian New Zealand theatre company, in 2019. So that was a 5-minute monologue that Bala and I wrote, and Bala performed and I directed him in it. And this was all as a result of like Ahi Karunaharan, our director. He kind of saw that both of us have kind of a warped sense of humor, and he's like, y'all should work together. And the idea came to me in the shower, where
classic.
Great ideas come from.
Yes. Totally.
We wanted to take the trope of a bearded brown man who is a terrorist and overturn that trope and have a bearded brown man as the bomb diffuser.
Yeah, nice.
But he's not that great at his job, and then what happens? So the journey is going from that to everyone who saw the monologue said there's something here, expanded into a show.
Yeah.
And then our wonderful producer Gayatri came on board, and she said, y'all don't work well without deadlines, so
you've got some paying customers coming in on this date.
Yeah.
Sorted
totally.
out. Yeah.
Totally. And then now we're at Q Theatre after two successful seasons at the basement.
Excellent.
Yeah, great. I think, you know, there's something to be said when you see something and you're like, there is a kernel of an idea. And I think what is a testament to you both is people seeing that kernel, seeing you guys and knowing you guys can deliver on this, you can expand on this, you can take this further. I think that investment and seeing of potential is a testament to not just the work, but also both of you as practitioners, because you both have been working, right, for ages doing not just comedy, you've done theatre, there's film, there's a number of companies you've been working with. So I'm so stoked that you've had that backing from not just Ahi, but heaps in the industry, right? Bella, talk to us about what is it like to be both the writer and the performer in the work, and how do you sort of balance those roles when you're in the room? Like, do you have to kind of lock the writer out of the room at some stage?
I think it's hilarious being the writer and the actor at times, but it's also really challenging. There is a temptation to sometimes lock the writer out of the room, but yep. I think our particular process is definitely to be, and maybe I wouldn't recommend this to everyone, but wearing both writer and actor hats at the same time.
Got you.
Because, and it is a comedy show, and that's kind of important to know. And a big thing with comedy is like testing, right? You hear stand-up yeah. comedians testing jokes, testing gags, whatever it is. And so for us, like, we'll write some gags, write some jokes, write some scenes. We'll test it on the floor with our director or our producer or our stage manager as the audience. And then we'll get that instant feedback and be like, yeah, that was not funny. And then instantly our writer brain will go like, okay, what's the next joke? And then we'll try stuff on the floor. So we're kind of writing and acting as we go. But having said that, at one point the writers do have to just leave.
Yeah.
And I think the writers have left and we're fully acting now, especially as we go into the theatre and we have to help out the tech team do their mahi. The writers are long gone.
Yeah, that out. They've left the building.
100%.
Do you, with your writing process, do you both write independently, come together and share? Or are you in the room together? Like, what is the dual writer process for you?
We've tried both, mm-hmm. And both have been reasonably successful, I guess. But the most joyous version is when we're both together, right? Because we're mates, we have that warped sense of humor together, we riff off each other. It's most fun when we're both in the room and we're just like trying stuff out.
Yeah.
So that's probably our process. Yeah,
great. And talk to me about like some of your, I love that you guys talk about your warped sense of humor. And I've had a bit of a taste of it seeing some of the things you guys have done over the years. But what is your, I don't want to say inspiration, but what are some other kind of key pointers to give people an idea of your comedy style or your what do you find funny, I guess?
I guess Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, bromance comedy,
mm-hmm.
and that whole series that they did, I think that was one of the inspirations. We have a lot of Bollywood influence but that's more I'm older to Bala, which he keeps reminding me of. There's some really great Hindi movies from the 90s, which he's a fan of as well.
Yeah.
So it's this amalgamation of, you know, the Hollywood, the Bollywood, and local. Like, I'm a big fan of Flight of the Conchords, for example. So that dry kind of sense of humor as well is there. And I love Larry David, so Curb Your Enthusiasm.
This word. This is painting a very strong picture.
Yes.
I have to say, I saw the basement version of this show and I loved it. And one thing that I observed that I really enjoyed about this was you guys are very good at building a world around just the two of you on the stage. And if I could steal a question, Alice, I was going to ask, how do you manage that? How do you create that, you know, structure around you when it is, or at least in the basement iteration, just the two of you and very limited props on the stage?
Yeah, thanks for your kind words, Rach.
It was great. I'd recommend everyone go along. This is a very funny show. Highly recommend.
Please, please, this show doesn't work without an audience.
Please. Oh, gosh.
No, it's a great question. And I forgot the question. What was it?
How do you build the world around you on the stage?
A lot of it is like thinking about the medium of theatre. The thing that separates theatre specifically from like film, which we both work in as well, or, you know, a radio play or a novel, mm-hmm. is that with the theatre you've got the audience and you can say stuff that kind of forces the audience to use their imagination. Mm. So we can just be like, don't go over there because it's really dangerous, and then have a red light, and then people will, like, in their own minds, build a picture of what that really dangerous space is, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we probably use, like, imagination of the audience, and, like, we will just say stuff and create stuff, and, like, we will believe it so hard that the audience are like, oh yeah, okay, I guess it's real.
I'm in it.
So using that play between the audience and the performer, which is kind of specific to theatre in a way that it isn't with anything else.
I just and I think when you're an audience member and you're given a license to dream, and it's not even a license, it's like a responsibility. You're like, you know, the player is like, look, there's a dangerous thing, there's a red light, you got to do the work, and it's so satisfying. Like, totally. It is the most satisfying thing to watch that, and for the performer to trust that the audience is filling in the gaps, where we always talk about this idea of play to the top of the intelligence of the audience, and it is to assume that they know, and they're working with you in that way, totally satisfying. So you're on, you open tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow. You're on for 2 weeks, hey? Is it this weekend next? Is it a Tuesday to Saturday kind of deal?
Yep.
And it's what time are you kicking it? Or like, what's kind of the time?
So on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, it's 7:30 p.m.
Okay, gorgeous.
And then for the rest of the week, I believe, it's 8 p.m.
Okay, ooh, that's nice. Get some,
We've got a cheeky 4 p.m. matinee on a Sunday as well.
Oh, so. Love that. Okay, we love a matinee. Honestly, it's a dream. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So you're going pretty much down to the theatre after this to finish your tech, finish the pack in, and then basically opening night, bada boom, tomorrow. If you want to get some tickets, go to www.qtheatre.co.nz, grab some tickets. Both Rachel and I highly recommend this one.
This comes highly recommended from Beef and Breakfast.
So yeah. We also highly recommend it. Please come.
Great. Thank you both so much for coming this week, and we're bloody well looking forward to seeing this one.
Break a leg. Thanks, guys.
That was Stage Direction with Alice Canton.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.